This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, we've been talking a little bit this morning, of course, on the Aaron Judge 61st home run. Did it in Toronto last night. It ties him with Roger Maris. It does tie both of them for seventh all time. So as we've been discussing this morning, it really depends on where you're at in terms of your idea of what this home run mark means. Has he tied the all-time single-season record because you don't recognize Sosa, McGuire, and Bonds as hitting more home runs than the 61 mark that Roger Maris had? If you are, that's sort of where you're at with that. If you're not, he's just seventh on the all-time list. But think about this. If the guy that reached out to catch that baseball and dropped it and was just sulking and just looked really distraught, like he just let $1 million go through his hands, why did he feel that way? Why did he feel that way? Think about this. And if you caught the football of a quarterback that was seventh all time in touchdown passes for a season, would you even know? Like if you somehow got that ball, like a player threw it in the stands and you had it, would you even know? Would you sell it? Would it have some value? Why did that baseball have value? It had value because, again, there are people out there that recognize this as a historical achievement in the sport of baseball. But not everybody does. It's not universal. I always look back on the summer of 1998 and I say to myself, you know what? In the end, despite all with all of those guys in front of Congress and looking embarrassed and admitting later that they took performance-enhancing drugs, I will never, ever, ever deny that it was one of the greatest times of my sports fan life. Was following that throughout the country. For many of us, it sort of grew up liking baseball and wondering if we would have a similar thing in our life, like the chase for 60 that Roger Maris had in 1961, or Joe DiMaggio's hitting streak, or anything like that, where we could unified come together and watch something and root for it. We did. It was only in the aftermath that we found out, you know what, maybe it wasn't all that. Maybe there was some things helping it. But I never thought about that for one second while we were following it. There are people who are so hurt by that, that what happened last night is more special to them than anybody else that was watching it, maybe as a young person. All right, we'll dive a little bit more into that, but we'll get back into the NFL because the Patriots are heading to Green Bay. What's the deal with Mac Jones? Don't ask Bill Belichick. Next.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, again, Canadian singers today on a Throwback Thursday. This was the day it was announced Montreal Expos would be no more. They were going to move to Washington, get out of Olympic Stadium. Bye-bye, no more Expos. All that history, all that rich history, gone. Off to Washington. All right, I'm going to get to Bill Belichick in just a second. I want to get one thing on Aaron Judge. So, by the way, this is Alanis Morissette, and she's in some ads for SiriusXM, which I was glad to see because I didn't know what the heck she was doing. I knew she was still touring and stuff, but I didn't know she was doing some funny ads with like Alice Cooper and everybody else. So, Alanis Morissette, did you like her music? Because I was iffy with it. Some of it was good.
Some of it's fun. Some of it's, the biggest problem I have, they all sound the same.
Yeah, they all sound the same.
Every one of her songs sounds like the other.
All right, so Aaron Judge hit his 61st home run last night, ties him with Roger Maris. That's the big story of today. Here's the way it sounded on Yes. Here's Michael Kay.
And the 3-2. Drill deep to left field. This could be it. See ya. He's done it. Number 61. He's been chasing history, and now he makes it. He and Roger Maris are tied with 61 home runs, the most anybody has ever hit in a single season in American League history.
I'm not a great baseball announcer. I found that early in my career. That just did not sound great. I didn't think that was a very good call by Michael Kay.
It was almost like he wasn't prepared for the situation.
Yeah, it was very... You're absolutely right. That's the best way to put it. It was as if he was caught off guard.
Yeah.
Like he was just
he
like.
He didn't know it was coming.
Like he was just kind of fooling around. Like he's like, and the pitch. Oh, there's a drive. And that ties him with Roger Maris for the home run. No one's hit more in the American League. Shoot, was it, somebody warn me when the? Could somebody tell me when he's at the plate for crying out loud? Golly!
Could somebody tell me that this home run meant something?
Better yet, it was this. He had something written down, like something kind of poetic. He's like, when Judge hits that home run, I'm gonna get my script out. I've got this written out. It's gonna be great. And then it's over the side, and it's under some papers, and it's like. And there it goes, and it's, and he can't, he's like, shoot, I grabbed the wrong thing. That's a commercial for, the Whiz. And then he's just going with whatever's on his top of his head.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, he's just going with whatever talking points he's had throughout the, because it just doesn't sound.
And it's just facts.
Yeah. And it's just,
everything
it's,
we already know.
There's nothing. Yeah, listen, and I don't want a home run call like that to be some long soliloquy. I actually think he talks too much in it. And it's not a Vin Scully thing. I think you need to breathe a second. You don't have to fill the whole home run trot with words.
Which is what he did. Because when he stops talking is when Judge crosses
home plate. The plate. Yeah, like the whole time Judge is going around. And he's doing it on television. Like John Sterling had the radio call. This is on television. He's not even letting the picture set the scene. He's just letting. He's like just mouthing stuff that we kind of already knew. You know, it's just like you. There's a you. I don't know. Again, I'm not good. I learned very early but that baseball wasn't my thing, so I don't want to be overly critical here. That just it did not sound like a very good enthusiastic call for the moment.
No, and it is weird. I mean, you know. When Kirk Gibson hit his home run, everyone was caught off guard. None of us thought that was even possible because the guy could barely even stand, let alone swing a bat. And that's why, I'm not saying that Michael Kay could be Vin Scully. Vin Scully's the GOAT. But Vin Scully, you know, at least it sounded like he was prepared for it, for the moment.
Right, exactly.
He at least sounded ready. And that's. Where I look at Michael Kay, just didn't sound like he was ready for it. Like, it's totally shocked him that a 61st home run happened. I was like, wait, it actually did.
What was the line Vin Scully said?
The year the improbable, the impossible happened.
Yeah, the year and the improbable. Like, you're not writing that down before a hobbling Kirk Gibson comes to the plate to take a swing. You're coming up with that on the spot. You're coming up with that to capture the moment.
And I think that's why there was always pauses, because I think he was giving himself time to find the right words to say, not just like,
exactly.
Kirk Gibson, two busted hamstrings, just hit a home run. We saw that.
Very early in my career, when I was doing a lot of play-by-play, I was doing a lot of high school games and some college games, and I was doing it in my 20s, and I barely got out of college, and I was doing these games. And that was a little bit of a learning curve. A lot of people don't know this, but... Everyone sends tapes out to these teams, and everyone thinks that these teams sit, these minor league teams and these college teams, they sit and they listen to 1,000 tapes and they're judging each one of them. Most of the time you get your play-by-play jobs because you're like the only person in the building that can do it. Like they come up to you and they go, you ever call hockey? I did once in college. Great. Can you call the St. Anselm hockey game tomorrow night? Sure. Right, and you just kind of grab the equipment and go. And that's how kind of I did it as a career. And I learned, again, I learned very early. I wasn't good at baseball because I talk fast and I said this when Vin Scully passed away when you were on vacation. It wasn't that I knew I wasn't Scully. I wasn't naive enough to compare myself to that. I knew I couldn't do what it took to be a good baseball announcer, which is to know when to speak, know when not to speak, tell a story, pace the game. I didn't have that. I learned, and I was lucky because I didn't try to force it. I just realized I didn't have it. But one thing that I struggled with early was I was trying to say too many things at once. And I had a guy that, you know, a friend of mine in television, a mentor, he said, look, pause, let the action happen a little bit, and then find the right wording to say what happened. You're calling a football game on the radio. You're the people's eyes. You're calling something on cable TV. You don't. The eyes are the picture. But pause a little bit. Learn to say in a concise way what happened. Because when you go, when you just mumble or you talk too fast, it ruins the broadcast. That, again, he's done a lot of games. Michael Kay's been doing this a long time. I'm personally, I don't listen to, I don't watch Yes Network. I don't watch him on a nightly basis. Maybe people in New York have always known this about him. I don't know. But I'm blown away by the amateurishness of that call. Yeah. So here's John Sterling is in his 80s. Here's John Sterling's call of Aaron Judge's home run.
And the payoff. There goes the deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. Number 61. He ties Roger Maris for the American League single season record with 61 home runs. It's a two-run Judgian blast. Here comes the Judge. A two-run blast, and the Yankees take a 5-3 lead on number 61 for Judge.
All right, on that particular one, he said a two-run blast, I think, three times. He said
61 home runs three times.
I'm
not a fan of that one either. It's do these guys know? I mean, it's a huge moment, especially if you're a Yankee fan.
You could talk about the pressure. You could talk about of all the walks, the nights, the long wait. Bring up the last time he hit home run, which was a while ago. I think it was September 20th.
Yeah.
I'm talking 8 days ago.
Because after that clip, I shortened that one down because after that, it's Susie Waldman talking.
Yeah,
And he comes back in and they literally say the same thing. He's hugging every single player.
Yeah.
Look at this. Look at this moment. He's giving hugs. He's high-fiving. Yeah, I mean, they're hugging. He's hugging every single player. I mean, I know it's a radio call. You're trying to paint a picture, but you only need to say it once, just like that. It was like, it was a two-run home run.
I'm telling you, I don't know Michael Kay. I just wonder in his head, after the fact,
does he want it back?
Go, damn, I blew it. That wasn't what I wanted. That's not what I wanted. As a professional who's done this for years, that was not the call. Philip has a great point on Twitter. Tom Brenneman had more enthusiasm than Nick Castellanos that day he got thrown off the Reds broadcast for using a slur. Philip, 100% right. Tom Brenneman, who was giving an apology when he knew he was going to get fired for what he said on a hot mic, gave more of an enthusiastic pump for Nick Castellanos' home run than Michael Kay did for Aaron Judge's 61st. I'm telling you right now.
That's awesome.
I'm telling you right now, Michael Kay is like, that's not going to happen again. When he gets 62, that's not going to happen again. I am going to make sure. And here's the thing. Here's why I bring it up. I'll bring it up for this reason. When Albert Pujols hit his home run, number 700, it was on Apple TV, and a lot of people in St. Louis had to listen to it on the radio, and they said what an enjoyable moment that was to hear it on the radio. Benjamin Hockman, who writes at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, who I've known for a long time, he and I follow, wrote a column on it to write about how he was blessed to have heard it on the radio rather than seeing it, because the call, I think John Rooney was the one that made the call, was eloquent in the description of the home run.
Well, here, you want to hear it?
Yeah, all right, I'll hear it.
Pujols with the widespread stance, arms out over the plate. Bickford from the stretch. The 1-1 pitch. A swing, and there it goes! Left field, way back! That's home run number 700! Pujols hits a three-run homer, and he hit 699 and 700 at Dodger Stadium on September 23rd, 2022. 8:23 p.m. Pacific time.
Gives you the time, gives you the moment. That's an enthusiasm off the bat. He knows, right? It's gone.
Yeah. I got something for Philip.
All right.
I made a comment earlier tonight that went out over the air that I am deeply ashamed of. If I have hurt anyone out there, I can't tell you how much I say from the bottom of my heart, I'm so very, very sorry. I pride myself and think of myself as a man of faith. As there's a drive in a deep left field by Castellanos, it will be a home run. And so that'll make it a 4-0 ball game. I don't know if I'm going to be putting on this headset again.
I haven't heard that in a while.
That's going to get me every time, man. That's going to get me every time.
God, is that just laying perfect?
Laying his soul out. Just laying his, like, that's it. Everything I've worked for is going to be gone. My dad is one of the greatest broadcasters of all time. I followed in his footsteps, and I just kissed my career goodbye. But there's a drive by Castellanos. And Philip compared that call to Michael Kay's call of the 61st home run. Hey, Philip, tweet of the day, man. That's tweet of the week. That's great. So funny. Oh, God. I'm just, you know, like I said, I just think he would want that one back. That just didn't sound like a, it didn't sound like a top level moment. It just sounded, you know, and if it, like I said, it sounded like he got caught off guard. All right, we're going to talk Patriots coming up next because Bill Belichick did what Bill Belichick does and everybody is still buzzing about it. That's next on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, as we continue Throwback Thursday, Montreal leaving, announcing that they were going to leave Montreal, head to Washington. Who is this?
Carly Rae Jepsen.
That's right. This was on the tip of my tongue. I remember my daughter liked this song 10 years ago, whenever it was. Whatever. I looked it up on Twitter. I kind of searched Michael Kay. Just to see what to get a feel for it. I didn't like the call, but someone said that he was paying homage to Phil Rizzuto's call of Roger Maris from 1961. Tried to do it almost exactly. That's a little weak sauce to me. I'm sorry. That was 60 years ago. Come on. Like, do your own thing. Do you, like, if you're doing it to pay homage to somebody, fine. But do you. Do the best call you can without having to pay homage to anybody. But I don't know. A lot of people didn't like the Michael Kay call. All right. So yesterday, Bill Belichick went to his press conference. And Bill Belichick did exactly what Bill Belichick does. Right? What do we know Bill Belichick in these press conferences? We know a couple of things. One, it's the last place he wants to be during the week of an NFL game. He's talking to the media. Two, he wants to appear as if he's above all of this, so he might go on the podium, but he has no time for your question nonsense reporting stuff. Three, he kind of gives surly answers that don't really have a lot of value other than you're getting him to say something. Okay? So just a reminder for those of you who maybe never heard me say this before, you will hear a lot of reporters ask questions where they will get a one-word answer or a two-word answer or maybe even a small, brief, five-word sentence. And you, as a fan, may go, well, that was worthless. But to the reporter, it's not worthless. Because when you ask a question, unless you're trying to force an answer, the answer is what you get and you use it in your story. So when you're writing a story or a column or anything, and you ask the coach, what did you think about that third down decision that your quarterback made to run the ball on 3rd and 8 instead of trying to force a pass? Let's say you're just asking that. And he just goes, I don't think much of it. That's your answer. Did you get an elaboration? No. Did you get a deep dive into the analytics? No. Did you get a real emotional response? No. But you got an answer. And that's part of your story. Your story is the material you get. You don't try to create the narrative. The narrative comes to you. Belichick has done this forever, right? He doesn't really get into a lot of details. And when he does, it's surprising. Like Mac Jones, when Mac Jones first came out on the scene, he spoke very glowingly of Mac Jones to a surprise of the many reporters there who have covered him on a daily basis. Sometimes he'll elaborate it a little bit. Sometimes he doesn't. He's very Greg Popovich in that way. Or you could say Greg Popovich is very Bill Belichick in that way. However you want to look at it. They're both the same. They're above it all. They know more than you. They don't mind telling you that they know more than you. And that's just their act. That's what it is. When you're winning, it's a great act. When you're losing, the act gets old. Right? I've never been a huge fan of Belichick's demeanor. But after reading Seth Wickersham's book, I get it. It's not really an act. He really is very cautious and very, very concerned about the information that he lets out. He's always been that way. Now, people say off the football, when you get him away from football, whether it's on his boat or any place, he's fun loving. He laughs. He tells jokes. I'll buy it. I've never been around him, so I don't know. But the people that are close to him say, yeah, he's great. Invite him to a Christmas party. He has a good time. He's not this individual. But he always wants to give you the impression that he's the coach, and being the coach means 24/7, 365, no days off. He loves that. That's his thing. So when asked about Mac Jones yesterday, who has a high ankle sprain and is unlikely to play, he said, day to day. There is no more elaboration. When he was asked even further about the injury, he said, what am I, a doctor? No one was asking him about being a doctor. People were asking him about an injury, and as the coach, he knows the report on the injury. Is he going to tell you? Of course not. They never do. Right? How about all those years they used to put Tom Brady listed as questionable, and the NFL said, stop. Stop doing that. Stop. No. He's not. Unless you can come up with a specific reason why, other than they're all banged up, right? But that's the way Belichick is. So it was fun for me this morning to sort of go over all of the sort of reaction that people had to this as if it's anything new. And those who have been covering the Patriots for a long time know that this is what you get. But as I said earlier, the story isn't Bill Belichick's unwillingness to say anything. The story is what he says, right? That's the story. Even if it's nothing, the fact that he says nothing matters a lot, because it's what he doesn't say that makes you go, there you go. I think Mac Jones is out for a number of games. Adam Schefter is reporting it. Brian Hoyer is likely going to start this weekend. I don't think the Patriots are going to risk a quarterback going out there with a high ankle sprain, a severe one at that, that he suffered late in that game against Baltimore. But Bill Belichick is saying, what line can I get to? How close can I get to the line to make the Green Bay Packers think that Mac Jones could be playing this weekend? How far can I go before the team has to make a decision on which quarterback is actually going to play on Sunday? How far can I take it? And he's taking it to that maximum line. Brilliant? Yeah. Because to Belichick, every little thing has to be evaluated as to whether or not it's an advantage or not. If he makes the Packers think, or anybody he's playing, if they have to put 1 second into a scenario, to prepare for a scenario that he knows is not going to happen, but he got them to do it, then that's a win in his mark, even if it doesn't show up in the final score. The Packers might win this game 35-3. Brian Hoyer may be awful, and Aaron Rodgers may have the game of his life, and he's had a lot of games of his life, but he may have a brilliant game. We don't know, but that's not what Belichick is doing this week. Belichick is like, how many little check marks can I put that are advantage Patriots in the preparation for the Packers and their preparation for us? And until that moment where I have to declare a quarterback, do I have to tell the NFL exactly what that Mac Jones is suffering from and what his situation is? Do we have to put him on the IR? Do we have to make a roster decision on him? Then I will do it. But until I don't have to do it, I absolutely will not be answering these questions on a Wednesday about the injury to my quarterback. That is not happening. Day to day. That's the answer he would give you if he had a broken leg, for crying out loud. He's leaving it up to the Packers' imagination to what exactly is. And they're getting reports, too, that they know the high ankle sprain is very likely he's going to see the field. Nevertheless, that's the game Belichick plays. Not surprising. We've been there, done that, bought the T-shirt and all of that. But he's never going to change. All right, we'll continue with Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now.
on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
I was wondering, waiting for when you were going to bring this guy out in our Canadian Singers Throwback Thursday. I was like, all right, we're getting closer, 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 finally brings out Bieber. All right, we knew that was coming. Is he fine? Isn't he sick?
He's sick, yeah.
Hasn't he got some sort of something wrong with him? Man,
there's some, I'm not, you can't remember what it is, but.
Right.
Yeah, he's not the best.
Montreal Expos announcing they were heading to Washington. Kind of worked out, didn't it? Let's be honest. Expos are playing in empty stadiums. Nobody really wanted to go there. I'm sorry. They're just baseball towns, and Montreal wasn't one of them. Sorry. And don't tell me, oh, well, they used to sell out with everybody sells it when you. That's the thing about winning. It brings out everybody, right? Go to any city in America that's got a hockey team in the South, and everyone's like, never going to work here. When they're winning, everybody's into it. That's the way it is, right? Doesn't matter what sport it is. When you're winning, everyone gets caught up in the moment. When you're not, it's who goes when the team is 30 games out of the lead in August, right? But 94, they were good. They could have won the World Series. They were loaded. So, but I don't miss them. Is that wrong to say? I don't miss them. Like, I miss the Houston
miss
Oilers.
Either.
I like the Houston. I mean, I don't like them, but I thought the Houston Oilers were cool. Like, I miss certain teams that are no longer around. I don't miss the Vancouver Grizzlies. I don't miss the some other teams. Well, I miss the Seattle Supersonics. I thought that was I still can't believe they moved, but they were bought by a guy that was like,
I think
we're not staying.
And honestly, I think the Expos are better suited for nostalgia,
yeah,
than they were as a team. Because I'll see the jersey, I'll see the hat. That's great.
Yeah, actually, Phil on Twitter said the same thing. I still love the old Expos jerseys, though. Yeah, the Expos jerseys were pretty good. So that's our Throwback Thursday today. Montreal announcing his heading to Washington. Washington would later win a World Series down the road just a couple of years ago. So, and for a while, they had Bryce Harper, one of the more exciting players in Major League Baseball. And remember, they had Steven Strasburg, too.
Yeah,
they had guys, and they were both like the first-round picks and whatnot. They were the budding superstars of baseball.
And you know what? They also had Juan Soto.
They had Juan Soto at one point until like 2 months ago.
And Anthony Rendon.
And Anthony Rendon. That's right. Boy, you just keep bringing up all the good names of Nationals greats that are no longer on the team.
Oh, you know,
didn't they once have Max Scherzer?
I was about to mention him.
I think they did.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, I think they had Max Scherzer on the team.
When you just name all the, aside from Bryce Harper, but all the other people we named, great lineup.
It becomes rather clear what's going on, doesn't it?
Yeah. Steven Strasburg's still on the team, though, right?
Yeah, I believe he is. But he had Tommy John surgery and all that.
Yeah.
He was played for San Diego State.
Weird career,
yeah.
That guy has had. I mean, it's just I've never known pitchers to be limited more than he has.
That's right. Yeah. So too bad too, because he was electric in college. I remember he was such a big college player at San Diego State. Could throw it over 100, all of that good stuff. So that's our Throwback Thursday with Canadian singers in honor of the Montreal Expos. So again, we were just talking about. Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots. Can I make a thing here? I don't really like Brian Hoyer as a quarterback. I know he's, but I don't think it's that much of a drop off. Is that wrong to say? I don't think Mac Jones, this isn't losing like a star quarterback. I mean, he's better than Brian Hoyer, but I'm not like, oh, it's over now. Like, I didn't really expect him to win at Lambeau Field anyway, whether Mac Jones was healthy or not. So I'm not a person that thinks like, well, the end is near. Like, Dak Prescott to Cooper Rush, I swear people were like, there were some people that were like, that's it, the playoffs are over. And then there were some people that were like, yeah, you know, we'll see, because I'm still not sold on Dak Prescott, despite 12 wins last year. Like, there was a complete compare and contrast seasons between Prescott not being on the team in 2020 and being on the team in 2021, right? When they were not terrible. When he was on the team in 2021, they made the playoffs, and they lost a home game, but they still made the playoffs, won the division. With Brian Hoyer, I don't expect the Patriots to be so far back, like, well, there goes their chances of winning at Lambeau.
Yeah.
I didn't think they had a good chance of winning anyway.
I hear exactly what you're saying. I mean, I will say that Mac Jones is probably better than Brian Hoyer.
Oh, he's better than Brian Hoyer without question.
But, it's not, oh, my God, Tom Brady's out for the season. I guess we're handing the ball off to Jacoby Brissett.
I don't even know who the backup quarterback for the Eagles is, right?
Yeah.
But if they lose Jalen Hurts, I'd be like, well, that's
they're done.
That's fun. That was fun while it lasted.
Who was?
And I don't even want to give credit. Who was it? Ann Book? I mean,
I'm looking it up.
I'm looking it up right now too. It is actually Gardner Minshew. Holy cow!
You know what? That's an upgrade.
What are we talking about? Of all the teams I could have brought up, one of our favorite quarterbacks over the last couple of years is the backup in Philly.
Matt, why isn't he starting for the Eagles?
What is going on?
God.
You're not having fun with the stash in Philadelphia?
They would have won four games by now, Tony.
Oh, give me a break.
Out of three possible play, they would be 4-0 with Gardner Minshew.
Yeah. Well, so I'm just, I'm not. Look, and I think Mac Jones is fine. I think it's, but I just.
No, I 100% agree with you. There are certain teams, Justin Herbert going down. I don't believe Chase Daniels leads them to the playoffs. Patrick Mahomes, if he goes down, I don't even know who the backup is for the Chiefs, but I don't believe whoever it is leading him to the playoffs.
By the way, Brandon Staley better be careful with this Justin Herbert thing.
Dude.
I'm not kidding. Like, I don't think he's got to learn to grasp this. You got to, what Kenny Rogers said, you got to know when to fold him, know when to hold him. Sometimes you got to fold.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you talk to a professional poker player, they don't play very many hands. They fold all the time. Sometimes as a head coach, you got to go, you know what? In this case, we're going to take our lumps and he's going to get healed. We're going to see what we got, but we are not putting him out there with fractured rib cartilage with no left tackle. That is not going to happen. We are going to get him healed up and ready to go. You keep injecting him with that pain stuff, that eventually is going to come back to haunt you. If you lose him for the season because you are careless now, that's dangerous. This team is built to go to the playoffs. It is built to win in the playoffs, and they are built to win because of that guy right there. And if you play him hurt and it never heals, and he's dealing with that on a week-to-week basis, injections and pain meds and all of that, he never is the same. And his play drops down tick by tick every week because he's never giving his body a chance to heal up, you're in trouble. I'm not saying he's going to be 100%, but he looked miserable in that game against Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Miserable.
And then you're right. He should have been pulled. He shouldn't have played the fourth quarter. I mean, give Chase Daniels some time. Come on,
who cares? You got to say, all right, I'm running this, and this is the way it's going to be. Look, you can make the argument about the Steelers and their situation. They're not dealing with an injury. They're dealing with production, right? But I'm telling you, the way Mike Tomlin thinks about this quarterback thing, whether you agree with it or not, is irrelevant. I'm just going to tell you what his mindset is. He knows the situation, and the situation is, they've got a veteran quarterback that they brought in to fill the spot because they drafted the future quarterback in the first round. Mitch Trubisky was going to try to win the job longer term than just a couple of years. But in the end, even Mitch Trubisky knows the writing on the wall. This isn't going to be a Jordan Love situation, right? Where the Packers draft Jordan Love and they're like, well, one day soon Aaron Rodgers is going to... No. They know Kenny Pickett's going to have the ball and is going to take over. But Mike Tomlin knows that when that day happens, he can't look back. He's gonna tell Kenny Pickett, now this is your job. Like, we're not going back to Mitch Trubisky and then figure you out later. You take this job over, you're going to take this job over. In the Chargers situation, he has the job, right? He has the job. You've got to protect him. You've got to get him healthy. Because that's the only way you're going to win. You're not going to win with Chase Daniel. You're not built to be like, anybody plays quarterback, we have a fighting chance. You have zero chance of making a run in the AFC without Justin Herbert. He's one of the top quarterbacks in the league. But he's not a top quarterback when he's got a fractured rib cartilage and you're just injecting him with pain meds and asking him to fight through it and not giving his time to heal. Now, granted, they're on a long week because they played Thursday night last week. So I don't know what his current situation is. But you got to be careful and make sure that you don't lose him down the road. Just, he's a young guy and you're aggressive and you want to try to keep everything rolling along the way people think it should be rolling along. But sometimes you got to wait to pull the trigger. This time, don't wait to pull the trigger. evaluate him properly and then make the decision on whether or not he can go. And like we said earlier, don't ask him because he'll go out there on a broken leg. They all want to. They all want to. That's the way it is. You've got to put him in a position where you go, look, how effective can you be for this team? And then I'm going to make a decision based on that. And you are not making the decision. And we're going to really get a good evaluation on this. Tonight, Cincinnati versus the Miami Dolphins. Tua Tagovailoa questionable, but is expected to play. He's got that back thing that people didn't believe was a back thing as to why he fell. But nevertheless, they feel like he is going to play. I'm really curious about this game because I'm high on the Dolphins. But as we did top five, bottom five earlier this week, the reason I put the Dolphins 3 was they won the game against the Bills, and they're 3-0. But the Bills, man, they had 500 yards of offense. And the Dolphins kept them out of the end zone enough to win the game, but the Dolphins didn't explode either. I thought the Dolphins with Hurts and I mean, I'm sorry, Tua Tagovailoa, sorry, still got Eagles on the brain, with Waddle and Tyreek Hill, with an exposed secondary that was dealing with rookies, I thought they'd be way explosive offensively. And I thought that they would be racking up some yardage. That didn't happen. Maybe the injury to Tua played a little bit of a factor into that, but I was surprised they only had 200 and change total yards of offense. I thought that they could exploit the Bills secondary because it seemed open to do that. And I'm curious to see what they'll do against this Bengals team. That offensive line still isn't working quite right. If they can get to Joe Burrow, this should be a really interesting game. All right, we'll come back, wrap up the hour. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Canada's been, they can produce some people, huh?
Yeah.
Joni Mitchell's from Canada?
Yep.
Good Lord, it's amazing. Paying homage to Canadian singers today on a Throwback Thursday. By the way, I've been on Twitter all show in this last hour. Rudy Martsky of USA, formerly of USA Today, used to be a media critic, television guy. He loved the call of Michael Kay's home run.
Really?
Tim Brando loved the Michael Kay home run. What am I missing? I hated it.
Yeah.
What am I missing? Like, all right, I'm not going to change my opinion. I didn't think it was very good, but I don't know. You know, a lot of it too is, well, people, you know, I mean, they're friends and whatnot. So.
If we get Tim Brando on, we can play and, like, you know, ask him, do you still love it?
Do you still love it? Yeah. We could actually do that. Do you still love it? Like, we could do that a year later.
Yeah.
Like, when you look back on the Aaron Judge home run, do you still love it? See what he says. Oh, God, yes. I still think it's great. Yeah, so, I don't know. I might be missing something on that.
I don't think you are.
I don't know.
Because it does sound like he is kind of making it up on the spot. Like,
I know,
or he wasn't.
That's the thing.
I get that maybe he was making it up on the spot, but it doesn't sound like he's prepared.
Do you know
like,
what,
it, like it shocked
know,
him.
Do you know what, you know why, okay. Listen, I've also seen people say, look, when he said this could be it, Phil Rizzuto said that in the 61 home run for Roger Maris. Okay, if you want to do that, that's fine. I'm not that into the history of all this, so if you paid homage to something, I'll give you that, and I'll pull back some of my criticism if that's the case. But didn't it feel like it should have been something better given his relationship to the Yankees? I mean, he's been doing that with the Yankees for a long time. I used to listen to him and John Sterling call games on the radio 25 years ago when I used to live in New England, and I could get Yankee radio in my house, in my car. I could still get their powerful signal late at night. I just felt like with your deep relationship to the Yankees, a deep relationship to the roots of that city, that it sounded like an Apple TV version or TBS version of that call when it should have been more personal, more deeply affected by the moment. You've been following this guy all year. You called his first home run in the majors. You've known him. You talk to him. You travel with him. I felt like there should have been a deeper connection, but nevertheless. Hey, I want to wish my brother a happy birthday. It is his 50th birthday today, so I want to say happy birthday to him. It's a kind of a big milestone. I think you grew up with a brother, right?
I grew up with three, yeah.
Three or three? You close to him in age?
No.
No? Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, kind of. My stepbrother, I am. My two half brothers are, I mean, I was close to them. I'm closer to them now than I was then because I'm 12 and 14 years older.
My brother and I are a year apart. And, yeah. So people thought we were twins growing up. And we, you know, it was really cool. I always had a wiffle ball partner, football, basketball opponent. I always had an opponent.
Older?
For everything I wanted to do. No, he's younger. So
he's younger.
Yeah, he's 1 year younger. So it's, but we very, very close.
Him so and I he always had someone kicking his butt.
No, it was the reverse.
No, oh
it
my
was
God.
The reverse. He won everything. He won except for golf. He won everything except for golf. In fact, a number of years ago, when my kids were little, he came over and he's one of those guys kids just like. He's like the crazy uncle that gives money, you know. But he would come. All the friends, my kids' friends, would come over to the house, and we would play football in the yard. And I was the quarterback. He was the quarterback. And we'd have the kids. My team beat him. And I was elated like you would not believe. Like, I was telling the kids in the neighborhood, guys, I know this is not important to you. It's extremely important to me, so don't screw up. If I throw you a ball, you better catch it. If you can touch it, you can catch it. I don't want to hear any excuses. So we're going to come down the field. We got a chance. It was like first 1-7 touchdowns kind of thing. I said, we got a chance to win this. Don't drop the ball. And the kid didn't drop the ball. I threw it in the corner. And then I fell to the ground in pure, pure emotion. Because I had finally gotten one over on my brother. He used to beat me in video games. He beat me in everything. So, but happy birthday, Philip.
Happy birthday.
We ran a 5K together a couple years ago. He beat me by 7 minutes. But I didn't care because I just wanted to finish that stupid 5K. All right, happy birthday, Philip. All right, well, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Glad you can be with us on a Throwback Thursday.